Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Before we get to my guest this week, my pal, Phil Rosenthal, I saw something really adorable in New York City. You know, well, first of all, I live in New York City. And if you're a tourist, I think somebody briefs tourists that the minute you hit the ground, you walk like you're an offensive lineman from the NFL and just barrel through people. That's not how we walk. We walk with a pace. We walk with a mission and an agenda. But it's a flow, and you kind of turn your shoulders a little to the left or the right to let me get by instead of barreling into me. It's my city. The other thing is bicyclists. You've heard me complain about them before. I don't like anybody with a bike. If you have a bike, I'm sorry. If you're like in the rural suburbs, it's fine. But in the city on a bike, they're all obnoxious. There's bike lanes. They go the opposite way. They blow. I've almost gotten run over by a bike twice or three times, actually, in New York. They blow through traffic lights when it's convenient for them. But then if you go past them too fast, they complain. They want it both ways. But the most adorable thing I saw was somebody in New York City with a little bell on their bike, because apparently ding-a-ling-a-ling is going to get my attention when I have a dump truck, a garbage truck barreling down on me, a cabbie blowing his horn, a guy with some mental issues talking to the voices out loud in his head, and me screaming at tourists that they're obnoxious and bowling me over. Not going to hear the ding-a-ling. Just not going to hear it. Not going to happen. But good for you. Good for you for thinking that that's the proper way to ride a bike in New York City. You know, the proper way to ride a bike in New York City is to take the bike and throw it into a dumpster, because it's not doing anybody any good. And I don't care if it's saving the planet and it's green conscious and all that other stuff. We just can't have bikes in New York City. Unless you're a delivery guy, then I need to have my stuff, my food delivered on time. Then you can have a bike. Oh, I feel much better now. Okay, my buddy Phil Rosenthal is our guest this week. Special episode. We met in person in New York City, and Phil created Everybody Loves Raymond, the hit sitcom, and hosts of the Netflix series Somebody Feed Phil, which is hilarious, a really great travel food show. I think it's one of the best, or the best one out there, and it's the top-rated one out there, and it he has great stories about sort of traveling and, you know, interviewing heads of state now. He's a big shot. My buddy Phil's a big shot now. No, it's a really great, great conversation with him. I love Phil. He's a true mensch. If you don't know that word, look it up. It's a good word. It's a nice word. But look it up. I don't know how to spell it, but, you know, it begins with an M. So this is Phil Rosenthal. If you're on a bike, I'd have something other than a bell, maybe a bullhorn have a cat and squeeze it really hard. Maybe that would make a lot of noise that people would hear if you want to get their attention while you're riding a bike. Anyway, enjoy Phil Rosenthal. That laugh is my friend Phil Rosenthal. We're laughing about THC cookies.
Yes!
Which apparently are very good sleep. It's a good sleep medication.
I didn't know that, I'm not a habitual drug user of any kind. I don't even drink very much. But this cookie that my son and his friends invented, it is probably the only product that I have found that I'm including Ambien that lets me sleep through the night. So how nice is this? A fresh baked cookie from this cookie mix.
Yeah.
You have this cookie and then you go to bed.
And of course it's legal.
Of course I wouldn't be promoting something illegal on your show. You're Paul Mercurio. You can't have illegal contraband substances on your show. What happens?
By the way, this is Phil Rosenthal, creator of Everybody Loves Raymond, host of a fantastic Netflix series, which is in season 5, called Somebody Feed Phil,
yes,
which to this day is the single best title of anything that I've ever heard. And it's really great. And it's a new season. We're going to talk about some of the episodes.
But
and
our food just got here, too.
It's okay. We'll people nosh.
This
we'll
is
like
awesome.
We do on your podcast. And then you also have a great podcast, Naked Lunch, with the likes of Alice and Janney and Jimmy Jam. And
you'll have to be on.
I would love to. You guys do such a great job.
Thank you.
It feels very conversational. like it should.
Is. But by the way, we're doing it right now, which is we're eating and talking. We'll try not to, you know,
oh, that's okay.
get our mouths full too much in the thing. But here's a Cobb salad that's just come for both of us.
What do you think?
Good. Good dressing.
Nice.
Got a little bit of a bite.
I love it. But here's the thing about food. Not only is it the great connector, meaning we, but it puts everyone at ease right away.
And it's a common, you can share, it's no matter where you are, if you're the opposite end of the spectrum of somebody, whether it's political, socioeconomic status, food does bring you together.
Absolutely. The great connector.
It's a common denominator.
But I also find, like, when we're doing the show, some people are nervous to be on camera. And so, lucky for me, we're eating, which puts them at ease right away. Why? Because it's an activity that they don't need practice or any kind of, you know, nervousness about. They know how to do it.
You just prompted me with something.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working on The Daily Show, Jon Stewart said to me one time, he goes, if you want someone to have, who has difficulty talking, not on camera, but just doesn't want to open up, give them a task
to do.
Like, just toss a football to somebody back and forth.
Exactly right.
And they get out of their own head, and it's a really good point.
I think more shows should have food on them. what if Colbert, you know, served everybody? I see once in a while he has drinks with the guests. That's fun.
Rum. He's a big
so
rum
that's
guy.
Good. Mm. But do you think people wouldn't want to see people eating?
I know, because it would. It really should. No matter how hip and suave or anything else, everybody eats the same. It's it can be a little messy. It can be a little ugly.
But everyone does it.
Yes. Well, what I love about the series that you've done from day one, and you're doing your new season 5, you found a way to, in a very subtle way, make a little commentary here and there without forcing it down people's throats, which I love.
If you invented the healthiest food in the world, right? You might get some health nuts to try it.
Hmm.
But for everyone else, they're not going near it unless it's also what? Delicious.
Right.
So same with entertainment. It's like we got our little messages in on Everybody Loves Raymond as well. But the job number one was to be funny.
Ice cream and carrot. You give them a spoonful of ice cream and you shove a little carrot inside. So, for example, you went to Helsinki in season 5. You went to Madrid. You went to Portland. You went to Maine, which is my neck of the woods.
Mm.
You are hilarious in that lobster outfit.
Oh, thank you.
With that hat.
Right, you can thank my brother.
Oh,
he puts me in ridiculous fit.
And in the episode in Madrid, there was a woman named Carmen. And Carmen had not had oysters before.
Oh, I love her.
And you said to her, quote, all I want you to do is try.
Mm-hmm.
Trying is its own reward.
Exactly.
And that's classic Phil. Like, it's a great message. It's not down your throat, no pun intended. And it really, it's really nice the way you do that.
Oh, thank you. Well, I feel so lucky.
Mm.
I feel like I'm the luckiest guy you're ever going to talk to. And my way of paying it forward is to introduce people to these things that I found in life that are make life worth living.
Yeah.
Well, and if somebody hasn't tried something that I think is delicious, I would love for them to try it. Why? Because it might make them happier than they are right now.
And by the way, everybody needs to watch the Oaxaca episode because you have some dance moves, my friend.
Oh, dance
moves. You know how to shake that booty. You walked into a wedding and just started dancing with this whole wedding. Well, the other thing that my wife and I love about the show is it's obviously food-centric, but you work in the architecture and the history. What was that big white building that you were kind of standing on in Helsinki? It had like wavy design to it.
That's actually the rooftop of an art museum underneath.
Oh, so cool.
But it's at ground. It's the rooftop is actually at ground level. The museum underground.
talk about Helsinki because you're being part of it, you're eating reindeer.
Yeah. I swear to you, Paul, if they brought reindeer out right now, you would think this is just a great filet mignon.
Really?
If I never told you, it doesn't taste gamey like deer.
Deer, my friends are hunting and deer. To me is gamey.
It's gamey. This had none of that funkiness, none of that. It just is a great.
Is it marbled? Is there any fat to it or is it pretty lean?
It was pretty tender, but it was super lean. And of course, almost every other meat in the world is healthier than cow, it turns out.
Just talk.
Like, we find the best way to do everything, right? This factory farming with all the empty, what do you call it?
Antibiotics.
Yeah, antibiotics that are in us now, and God knows causes what.
Right.
So, this is the cleanest, purest, freshest meat. And, you know, you might say, oh, but it's reindeer. Yeah, okay. Probably the idea of cow eating is weird to other people.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's because I was thinking initially, like, you said to the guy, you believe in Santa like we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Of course, how can you not?
That's the other thing that's great about the show, for anybody who hasn't watched it, is you really are an everyman. You're saying and asking things that I'm thinking in real time. And your overall approach to the show, which is, and nothing against him, but not Anthony Bourdain, where you're sort of going really sort of into that world of bugs and this and that or whatever, but you want to, you said, what do I want out of a vacation? Well, I want a hotel with a bed and a pillow. I like the food that I recognize as food,
right,
and not bugs, which are things that we don't necessarily eat.
Here in America.
Right.
But in Oaxaca, I had to eat a few.
Yeah, and you did. And that's the other thing. Your game for every... Was there anything? Has there ever been anything where you're just like, I can't?
That's in Oaxaca. You saw that too.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it for people, but there's something there
that
I think you'll react to.
Yeah.
And then she almost tops it with something else that I... I say this in the show. I don't want to insult any culture. That's the last thing I would ever want to do or offend anybody.
Hmm.
But when she presented me with this collection of things that was still moving.
Yeah, it was.
I said involuntarily, oh, no, 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 no. Which I don't think was a Neanderthal reaction.
No.
I think that most people from our country would react that way. Right. And she laughed and she was really sweet and good natured about it. But it wasn't a joke to her. She wasn't doing this to get that reaction.
Oh, no. Yeah.
This was an honest thing.
That's what I got. She wanted you to experience their culture.
I heard about a guy in a friend of mine went to China and he was in rural China. And maybe you're not going to see this in the cities, but in the country, in the boondocks, he was the guest of honor at a banquet. The American guy. They brought out a live poisonous snake. They held it up next to him. He was freaking out because it was, you know,
moving,
slithering around, and they're holding it by the neck. And they hold it up in the air vertically, and they slice this living snake open, pull out the snake's gallbladder, and squeeze it into a glass and give it to him. Why? Because he's the guest of honor. I said, what the hell did you do? He goes, there was no way I could refuse. It was too big a deal.
Isn't he worried about getting poisoned?
I don't think they were
literally.
Him,
no, but I mean.
But this was you drink this. It has all these properties, they say. Legend has it that you'll become virile and live a long time and whatever it is. So I said, you had to drink this juice from the gallbladder of a snake. Was it as bad as I think it was? He goes, you can't imagine. And he goes, and you know what the worst thing was? When I put it to my lips and it was warm.
And I have food in my mouth.
Right?
Thank you.
I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I'm never in that position.
The only time you don't want to be the guest of honor.
Exactly. Please don't honor me.
Well, yeah, you need that.
I am not honorable.
That gallbladder juice, because you need to be virile and healthy just to get the gallbladder out of the snake.
Wait, right, that
sounds like a lot of work to get a little gallbladder juice. How about just a little OJ? Here's a little,
please,
little Tropicana.
Anything. Tang.
You, when you're in Helsinki, there's, I don't want to give too much away, but the whole sauna thing.
Yep.
And they have a stove in the sauna.
Uh-huh.
And they're cooking food in the stove in the sauna.
The guy says, we're in the sauna. I'm in a bathing suit and a towel around my neck. He says, you want some sauna sausage? I don't know what the hell he was talking about. And sure enough, he
feels like, I've never heard it put that way.
That's right. I mean, this is the best offer I've had, actually, in a while. He presents this kielbasa that he just wraps in tinfoil and he sticks it in the burning logs that are heating the sauna.
Right.
It kind of makes sense.
Right.
I mean, it's a multi-purpose fire. And he had all this other stuff, and he had all these accoutrements and side dishes and stuff. It was fantastic.
And then you went on a boat that was a sauna.
That was the boat. I mean, I go outside to you know, because I got warm. And I'm in the middle of a lake. It's a boat.
And you sit with the Prime Minister of Helsinki.
Oh, he's awesome.
Hello. Unbelievable. Look at you, like Mr. World Leader.
I don't know how we arranged that, but I'm very grateful.
She said, did you go swimming? I said, no, it's too cold. She goes, it's not cold right now.
Yeah, I told her to jump in. She's fantastic. What I came away with from that interview that we did over coffee was, I think the world would be better if we had more young leaders like that. It's a 35-year-old.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Mom.
Yeah.
Right?
A little
young.
Daughter. Yeah. 35.
But sharp and great. Exactly what the world needs. And look, right now, we filmed this, you know, a few months ago. But look what she's done since then. She stood up to Putin.
Yeah.
She's joining NATO.
NATO. I was thinking the exact same thing.
Right.
Right.
She's
and
a
if
hero.
You, and if you saw her, you'd think, well, she's young and she's a professional,
but
probably.
Brave and great.
She's running a country.
That's right.
And that was another point where you again did one of your sort of subtle messages about, you know, how clean and there's no pollution and, you know, just the whole environment, sort of a little bit of a green message without
it's not
hitting you over the head, but it was worked because it was in the context, in the moment. It didn't feel forced.
It's not.
And I just watched this show and it was like, yeah, and so it worked for me when you did that.
Thanks.
You
know? I never want to be didactic and boring, but there are messages all around us.
Could you stop using big words with me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. No. Yeah. It is all around us. You're right.
We read that the Finnish people are the happiest on earth. So why wouldn't I ask the Prime Minister about that? Why do you think that is?
Right.
She goes, it's not superficial. It's not like we're smiling all the time. By the way, they're not.
Right.
It's because we have very clean air, water, and food.
Yeah.
And we take care of each other.
Right.
Okay, a lot of you might think, oh, socialist message. But it's kind of a human message, isn't
well,
it?
I mean, I connected with it. My wife did, because my brother-in-law, my wife's brother, has been living in Denmark for the last 30 years.
Oh, my God, I love it.
And he lives in Odense, which is an island off of Copenhagen. And so
I love it.
Finland is, the Finnish people, very similar.
Right.
If you didn't tell me.
Scandinavian.
Yes. You know, you go there, it's about family and food. You're Jewish. I grew up, you know, Italian, Catholic, very much about same kind of culture, same kind of, and socialized democracy. So there's not a lot of rich and there's not a lot of poor.
That's right.
But everything's taken care of.
That's right.
And people say, oh, well, you know, you taxed up the yin yang, whatever.
No.
You're not. And actually,
it's half.
Right.
But look what you get for it.
Right. And the argument, the other side is, well, you are being taxed. Okay, our government isn't giving you a free university, but you're paying $60,000 a year to send your kid for 4 years
at least.
At least. So that is a form of a tax. Whereas you get free university, free health, universal health care.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Why is that bad?
Right.
I don't understand. Well, and of course,
anything different scares people. That's the problem. Well,
and you're gonna say, "Oh, I'm Mr. Hollywood liberal." I'm really not. I'm just a humanist. I just see this stuff as being good for everybody. Well, like this is even not a religious fellow, but I think these are the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. I think.
Did you set up, when you set out to do this, and we had talked about this before, you've been on the show before, but just for people who haven't heard it and to refresh, I mean, you're obviously a foodie, you love to travel, and I know you wanted to bring a relatable travel show to people, which you've clearly done.
Thank you.
Were you also, in the back of your mind, had you always had this idea that where I can, I'll get a message or two out there, or did that just evolve organically as the show went on?
When you're writing anything, you're thinking, what the number one question is, what is this about?
Even
what is it about?
Every episode of Raymond.
Exactly. What is it about? Now, that doesn't necessarily
You lose sight sometimes? You're so immersed in what you're writing that you lose sight of the bigger picture?
Oh, that happens all the time. So if you center on what is this about, is the show's narrative contributing to a larger message? Not that you need a message, but just something either very relatable, that this is about relationships, which almost every episode of Raymond was,
mm-hmm.
or some bigger picture thing.
Right.
And the number one reason to do that is not because you have this strong message, but because it strengthens the show itself.
Yeah, it makes it.
Something is about something,
yes,
then it's not about nothing, and it's not about just
right. And it gives it another dimension.
You have something else to hang the plot on,
right?
Because it's about something,
right? And in this case, your episodes of Somebody Feed Phil is about food, but there's a subplot always in it in every episode.
I would dare say it's not about food. Food is the jokes, the jokes of Raymond.
It's about connecting with people.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And I think the world would be better if we all could experience a tiny bit of somebody else's experience, right?
Well, that's exactly what my one-person show was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to bring it back after COVID.
Great.
You've been a major supporter of that. Thank you.
I'm so happy about it.
And Frank Oz is directing it.
He's great.
And he, you know, he just said, you know, it's a show with heart, but not in a hokey way, but it has humanity in the whole. And actually, I didn't necessarily start out saying I'm going to have this lofty goal. But what ended up happening is I say in the opening of the show, if we talk, we connect. And if we connect, we realize we have more in common than we think.
Always.
And you don't have to talk about politics. It's about what you do with Raymond, and what you do with this show is conversations with people about relationships, marriage, raising kids, gender identity, all these universal themes. Where I had a transgender person on stage, and it was one of the highlights of the entire run. And people were going up to each other after the shows and connecting and talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
and chit-chatting, just mm-hmm. standing by their seats, which is exactly what I had hoped would happen. But this transgender person was important because I felt like, to a lot of people, unfortunately, someone who's, you know, has gender identity issues or whatever, or they're trans, they're like weirdo freaks that are whatever.
Right.
And then you realize, you talk to them and you go,
oh, this is a person.
There's a person who's figuring it out like the rest of us.
Exactly.
And
hasn't
it figured out, and doesn't have a fit, has a supportive father. And this person who was transitioning was the star of the night.
I'm sure.
Just so I think your show is. It's really nuanced, and there's not a lot of nuance out there these days.
No. Listen, where I come from, we learned that good writing is saying it without saying it.
Right.
So if you just show it,
right?
I don't have to say, I don't have to talk about the thing.
So in that moment, sitting with the Prime Minister of Finland,
yeah.
by the water in a
mm-hmm.
park,
mm-hmm.
had you going into that conversation planned to say that, or did it just come organically about sort of, you know, how healthy that place is in terms of air and food and water? Because
I know these are her values, mm-hmm. and I know that and I was pretty sure it was going to come up, but I don't even need to say it. I know she's going to say it. She's promoting an agenda.
Right.
That's probably why she did the show.
Yeah.
Not because I'm so cute.
But you are. You're adorable.
But it's fine. By the way, I think when I say we're going to sit with the Prime Minister of Finland, you suddenly have an image in your head of what that guy is going to look like.
Exactly right.
What the old guy with white hair is going to be the Prime Minister of Finland. Right. And then this, I'm sorry, knockout.
Yes.
Comes out.
Hot. Yes.
Come on.
Mm.
And so right away that gets your attention. Why? Not because I'm like Mr. but because our expectations are of what we have here.
Yeah. And okay. It opens your eyes to the way other cultures live.
And then when she's brilliant and articulate and speaks right. better English than either of us.
Yes, I know. I was thinking that too.
Right? I mean, just fantastic. And that's what made me say, oh, maybe you should be in charge of more things or people like you.
Did you, by the way, how was the egg salad with butter?
Great.
Better with mayo? He had egg. I'm going
to
give this
away. We're used to egg salad with mayo. We're used to it. We know what that is.
Yes.
But what if it was whipped with butter?
I'm a big butter
fan. So I tasted that. Somebody must do it here. And if they're not, this is my ad for doing it. Try it, people.
Did you...
to make it at home.
Did you... When you were in Madrid and...
one of my new favorite places, by the way. Have you been?
I have not been to any part of that country. And everyone's telling me.
Thing. Yeah. Doesn't make you want to go?
Yeah. I was telling my wife and I were talking about it. Like, we have... That was...
It's like the Paris of Spain.
And you take us to the Sobino de Bobin. I'm probably mispronouncing it.
Botin.
And it's the...
Or Botin.
Botin.
Botin would be French. Botin.
Oldest continuously operating restaurant.
In the world. From the 1700s. Almost 300 years old.
All family.
I believe for a long time, yes, it's been one family. Yes.
And what surprised you about that restaurant?
How good it was. You figure the oldest continually operating restaurant in the world is just getting by on its oldness. That the history was the only thing that was
kind of phoning it in kind of thing.
The food doesn't have to be good. It's not the point. We know a lot of restaurants like that.
Oh, right.
That are old establishments where the food is besides the point.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one in Brooklyn right now as we speak.
But the great ones hold on for a reason.
Yeah.
If they didn't offer something great, they wouldn't be the oldest continuously operating. But so what's their specialty? Roast suckling pig comes out of the wood oven. And I'm telling you, that's one of the world's great dishes.
Well, pig
like
is
worth a trip to Spain for that.
Pig is big in Denmark, too. They do a lot of amazing things with pig.
It's big everywhere. You know why? It's very, very delicious. Look, we have a little bacon in our Cobb salad, right?
Right.
What's the best part of this salad?
The bacon. Sorry, avocado.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
Sorry, tomato.
And how are you? Are you and your brother, poor Richard? It's so funny when you guys do that. How are you deciding where you're going to go for a season?
So, usually it starts with me. Hey, we haven't been here yet, right? Or I've always wanted to go here. Can we investigate it? So, Richard heads up the production team here. ZPZ is what they were, Bourdain's production company.
Right? Oh.
So we have the advantage of...
Have you always had that same production
from the
company?
Beginning, even at PBS.
Huh.
And they're brilliant. They know what they're doing. They have access to the best, not just camera people, but editors.
But this
from
is their
his
thing.
Show,
they do,
that was 18 years.
They
his
do.
Show.
His show was 18 years. That long.
I mean, it moved around to different networks, but...
And that's their thing. They do food. travel shows.
They do some other reality-based shows too, but I think they're most famous for that. And not only do we have these great technical people, but they, because of Bourdain's show, they have fixers all over the world. Fixers are the people that connect us with the chefs, with the tourism board, with the government, and they literally fix it so that you can have these scenes with all the permits and all the other stuff that you need to go through, where to stay, what to eat, right? And they know the town because they live there.
Yeah.
So we have boots on the ground everywhere on Earth. So we figure out, do we have, if let's say I want to go to Madrid, think there's enough there to get to film for a week and get an hour out of it? Oh, yeah, Madrid, that's a no-brainer.
And the parameters for figuring out if there's enough there, quote-unquote, in a town is they look at the number of restaurants, the quality of the restaurants, and that kind of thing. And if there's an interesting sort of culture around
that. And charitable things, too. I always want to include something like that where I can. Something that's more than just a guy eating. Because that would be boring, even to me.
So define for people charitable when you talk about it in this context.
Well, for instance, in Madrid, there's this restaurant. So it's somewhat connected to what we're talking about in the show, right? I know why people are watching. They like food and they like my stupid sense of humor. And they like to see the beautiful locations.
Right.
But while we're there, what if woven in was one scene where we tried to do some good or shine a light on a place that is doing good? So in Madrid, there's this bakery restaurant where half the staff is professionals. And the other half are people who have been incarcerated or were in gangs or trying to get their life back on track. And this place teaches them a trade and gives them a second chance in life. So I love that. And everything there is delicious.
Yeah, it was so. It's such a great scene. Does the fixer help you find that those kind of things?
Yes, because I
ask. You tell them. You say,
I'm looking for stuff. I'm looking for stuff in these towns.
Yeah.
And we vet everything to make sure it's, first of all, legit and great.
Yeah.
They will, as far as sidekicks go and guests that I might speak to, they do a Zoom with them to make sure that they have at least a little spark of personality.
Well, your guy in Oaxaca was great.
Amazing, right?
And what was nice about it is it was like, I'm kind of got my TV production at it. It's like you have your... It's like you have your guest co-hosts in some of these episodes.
Exactly.
He was funny and you guys had a little bit of a rapport and you're joking with each other. So
exactly.
And then he goes, next episode he's not there, but then you usually have somebody else that you're spending. Gentleman in Helsinki, I can't remember his name.
It's not even the whole episode.
No.
Just a scene or two.
No.
Because I want to talk to everyone.
Yes.
And if you're with one guy the whole show, you're mostly talking to him. Or her.
By the way, it was adorable. You trying to work the loom with the women. The loom in the Oaxaca.
Oh, yeah. These beautiful ladies who form this collective. That's another example of them trying to shine a light on a place that's doing good. These were women who, in many cases, were abused or abandoned by their husbands. And they didn't know what to do with themselves. And they live in a poor community. And they formed a collective. And they started weaving these gorgeous fabrics.
It's unbelievable.
That they hand dye and make these rugs. I came home with like four rugs, by the way.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. I had to buy them.
Yes.
Well, how could you not?
But you had this moment where you're like, oh, you worked all day in the city. I ruined it. Like you did. You like did
oh, they said, oh, you want to try the spinning wheel? Like we see in Rumpelstiltskin or something?
Right.
They say here, this old lady is doing it beautifully.
Right.
And this beautiful thread comes up and I take one turn on it and I snap the thread, the whole thing.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Thank you.
It's like the layers are really what make it. You know, it really is like,
and but the overall message of the show is to get you to travel. And I think by example, a guy sitting at home can go, look at me and go, if that putz can go outside, maybe I can too. Right? So many Americans, especially, don't even have a passport. 2/3 of Americans don't have a passport. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
2/3 of Americans. Which might explain a lot of things.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's the other thing. at the end of the Oaxaca episode, you say, another perfect way of doing it. It's nice. I'm paraphrasing, but you say, I think it's in voiceover.
Yeah.
It's nice to have people like this so close to our border.
We are so lucky to have that country as our neighbor.
That, right. Which was a nice way of saying, stop demonizing this. They're not taking your jobs, and you know,
screw the people who have prejudiced part of the country against an entire population of beautiful people with an incredible culture. I wish more people would go to Oaxaca.
Yeah.
It's the cultural and gastronomic center of Mexico. You cannot have a bad time.
Well, when you went to, when you were trying to, you were making tortillas?
Yeah. Another thing I can't do.
Those old women reminded me of my grandmother.
Yes.
And I used to make pepper biscuits with my grandmother, which is basically, and she would make the dough from scratch.
Wow.
So we would make the dough one afternoon. We have it rise overnight. Then we put in fennel seed and pepper and everything.
Peppered biscuit.
Pepper biscuits.
I've never heard of this. That's an Italian thing from
which
part of Italy?
You know what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
In the States, the only place I can find them is my home state, Rhode Island. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do.
What part
but you're going to get something.
But what part of Italy is that?
From Abruzzi.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would take the dough, and so now it's ready to go, and you cut it in chunks, maybe like 8-inch chunks, and then you roll it out with two hands so it becomes wider, and then you pick it up in the middle and you twist it, so you make a twist out of it.
Oh.
And it's about 6 inches long, and then you put it on a baking sheet with some olive oil, and you bake it for about 15 minutes, and you died and went to heaven.
What if you added THC to that?
Yes. And then the other thing that they have is red wine biscuits.
Oh.
And that you can have with breakfast with coffee. You could have it with some nice cheese.
Nice.
There's a lot of things you can do with it. I love the way you go. Look, the guy in the truck in Helsinki with the, and that's another one where he sends $5.
He wanted to serve the people, especially during COVID. There were elderly shut-ins. He would make the $5 meal to be delivered to them.
Right.
And then he also discovered a way to make a chicken sandwich, a fried chicken sandwich, which is so...
Oh, that looks so good.
It's everywhere, right? Oh, chicken sandwich is everywhere. Oh. This is one of the best in the world. And it's $5. It's unbelievably good.
I was laughing out loud the way you were eating it with your legs spread bent over. The Zoe chicken sandwiches in Chicago, which I totally got because of the whole dripping. It's hilarious.
What was it? Al's Beef? In Chicago, that's where that guy taught me to stance. You stand with the sandwich held away from the body.
Your legs are spread.
Your legs are spread, and you're bending over this sandwich as you eat it, as your body is as far away from the sandwich as possible, so as not to get everything all over.
If you saw that person, if I saw you from behind, you'd think you were being arrested, like your hands were on a cop car, and your legs are spread.
Yes.
It was hilarious. I want to talk a little bit about the podcast.
Oh, I have a podcast too. Did you know that there are now over, and I'm not exaggerating, 1 million podcasts?
I know. It's the law, actually.
Everyone gets one.
I'm a comedian. It's the law. I know. Well, you know. But you should. You're a great interviewer and you're a great personality. So you have Allison Janney on there.
Love her.
She tells a great story about West Wing and Jimmy Smits being pranked with roses. How I think it was Bradley Whitford was sending roses to Jimmy Smits,
but under someone else's name, Josh Molina's name,
right?
But so that Jimmy Smits would feel very uncomfortable around Josh Molina.
Because the way he was. It was pseudo romantic.
Or was it the other way around?
No, I think you had it right. I think it was pseudo romantic. The message was like borderline. Hitting on me?
See, but that's funny.
Yeah.
All you want when you do this is a good story from the person, right?
Oh, she had great ones.
She has great great show business stories. Oh, one of my favorites was Michelle Yeoh and T. Kwan. Did you see that movie yet?
No, I have not seen
it yet. Everybody's got to see that movie.
Okay.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I think it's the best movie that's come out this year.
Wow. Okay.
It's absolutely brilliant. Can I tell you the one I'm most excited for people to hear?
Mm-hmm.
And some of you younger listeners may not know who this is, but I think you'll know. Elaine May.
I didn't see it
coming up.
Oh, my God. You have Elaine May?
I think it's an exclusive because when I said, would you do our podcast? She said, what's a podcast?
I love it. How do you know Elaine May?
I went to a play on Broadway. It was 3 1 acts, one by Woody Allen, one by Ethan Coen from the Coen Brothers, and one by Elaine May. So I'm not going to miss that. I think it was 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
On Broadway.
Yeah.
And I go to sit down, and sitting in the row behind me is Elaine May with her daughter, Jeannie Berlin, and her boyfriend, Stanley Donen, who directed, among other things, Singing in the Rain. So my jaw drops open, and I say, oh my, can I say hello to you? And she said, yes, who are you? I said, my name is Phil Rosenthal. She says, you're in the business. I know that name. I said, yes, I created Everybody Loves Raymond. She says, that's our favorite show. We watch it every night. And she went on and on about it. Elaine May. I could have dropped it.
Wow.
And she went on so much. I said, listen, the play's about to start. Can I take you guys for lunch? She said, of course, how's tomorrow? And we had lunch right over there at Maria. And ever since, we've been good friends.
Stayed in contact.
Well, she's one of the most brilliant, hilarious people who's ever lived. And
really?
Had such a tremendous influence on comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a straight line from Nichols and May to Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
These were sketches that they did, for those of you who don't know, in the 1960s. They started in The Village with Woody Allen, with Bill Cosby. With Lenny Bruce, yeah. With these great things. And they took
Village
off.
Vanguard,
they became
yeah.
the toast of the town
yeah.
in their 20s.
Yeah. So smart.
And they got a Broadway show. And it was the first time you saw sketches that had a little bit of a tiny bit of political bent, but also about relationships and not just observational humor about the world, but about relationships and people, psychology even.
Right. Sociological. Yes.
But genius and witty and super funny.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I don't have to tell you, Mike Nichols became one of the world's great directors, and so did she. She ghost wrote Tootsie, by the way.
No.
Yes, she did.
Why did she ghostwrite it?
Because Larry Gelbart, who was one of the original writers, was let go from the project. And she did not want to, since he was a friend, she didn't want to take his credit away.
So is he fully credited with that, or is there somebody
else?
And
I forgot the guy who might have written the original story. But I know Tootsie very, very well. And that's, I think, the best comedy of the last 40 years. Can you believe it's 40 years ago, that movie? Yeah.
So she tells a great story. Alice and Janney tells a great story about being on stage and no one, she's like, no one's paying attention to me. And I found out later, she said Jackie O and John Kennedy were in the audience along with Nichols, Mike Nichols, Ellen Barkin. And, but the thing that really resonated with me too was how you never know, right? Mike Nichols saw Allison in a play.
Right.
Wrote him a letter, her a letter saying how much he enjoyed her work.
Yep.
And then put her in Primary Colors.
That's right.
Which she says she's convinced got her West Wing.
Of course it did.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that amazing?
How you connect the dots.
And
people who aren't in the business, that's why I'm talking about this, But you know what? Life is like that too. It's like it's about relationships and people seeing your work. But, you know, it's not a straight line. Like, you know, when I worked on Wall Street, I was a lawyer and a banker. And it was a pretty straight line, right? Like you do X, Y, and Z. You bring in this amount of business. You get promoted, baby. This is like you don't. That's why you always have to put it out there because you never know. You never know who's hearing it, watching it, seeing it.
That's right.
And then says, oh, I never thought of that person for this, but this would be a great...
Of course.
Yeah.
And people think, oh, she got a lucky break. She got a lucky break after doing this for 20 years.
Right,
right.
Right. Her skill finally got noticed at the right time at the right place. I think the luck
then
is...
Then we're suddenly in the right place at the right time.
I think that's the only bit of like, yeah, right place, right time, that I give you. But if you don't have the goods in that right time, right place, then it ain't happening.
And it's always a struggle. I mean, you could count on one hand the number of people who didn't work at anything and got lucky and got famous.
Right.
That doesn't happen.
Right.
Where your sex tape gets leaked and now you're the most famous person in the world. Well, that doesn't really happen a lot.
I tried it and it did not.
I have one coming out this afternoon. I'm going to see what that gets me. But I don't. You know, people think, oh, you did Raymond, so they gave you the Food and Travel Show. No, it was 10 years after Raymond before that happened.
And we've talked
and
about...
trying.
And we've talked about off-air, just getting some of the new seasons. It's been,
Everything's hard.
Yeah.
Nothing's easy. The world is different than it was.
Why do you think it's so hard?
Because everybody has a short-term goal. This is the number one problem in the world, is short-term thinking.
So put that
most
in context.
Most people are... thinking, just grab it now and screw later. And
so
when you do that,
of,
there is no later.
Right, but in the case of, it's not insane to say the creator of one of the most successful, brilliant sitcoms to come down the pike ever, here's a travel food show. Why was that a bump in the road for them before you could finally make it happen in your mind? What is the short-term thinking
so
there?
So if you had a successful sitcom, okay, and then you walk into your agent's office and say, you know what I'd really love? I'd love to do a food and travel show. Your agents who make money off of you look at you as if you've just pooped on their desk. So right. Not only are they not going to be supportive of this idea, they might try to hinder it.
Because there's no short-term gain for them.
There's no money in that. Yeah. I said, well, what if we become the top food and travel show in the world? And they all laugh and say, why would you be that in a world where there's other people who really do this for a living?
Right?
And now, today, I'm happy to say we're the number one food and travel show in the world.
There you go.
It only took, 10 years to get the show. I know we've been doing this for like 7 years off and on. Yeah, so 17 years.
I'm going to send you a list that someone gave me of rejections you got to love.
Oh, like Seinfeld?
It's like Seinfeld, Beatles, Edison.
Right.
Not in most cases...
But by the way, that happens 90% of the time.
You have
we are told
you have to persevere and believe and have faith that you are, you know, people said to me, why you left Wall Street and you just boom and did Daily Show, you got awards and everything. I'm like, no, it didn't just happen like that. I had to sell my apartment, unravel my life, move to a rooming house in New Rochelle, live below a 300-pound phone sex operator and start my life over again. And toil and lie in bed and wonder if this has been the right decision and all that stuff. And then try to come out the other side.
And some people might just dismiss it as, well, you're talented, so you get that. No, it's talent plus the 10 years.
Yeah. There's a few geniuses who don't have to, like, do that.
It's very, very, very rare.
Yes. Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to sing and look like Ariana Grande for that to happen.
Exactly.
That doesn't just happen.
Right.
Right? And I'm sure she could tell you about her struggles as well.
Now, you have Jimmy Jam. We're going to wrap up in a minute.
I'm fine.
You okay?
Good. Yeah.
You okay time-wise?
Jimmy Jam was someone that I would usually not meet
in my circle. I
but
saw that.
That's why I do the show with David Wilde, not just because we're friends and we've been eating lunch for 25 years together. He used to work at Rolling Stone, so his Rolodex is full of these amazing musical talents.
I thought the same thing. Phil and Jimmy Jam. Interesting.
Well, that's a good podcast.
Yeah.
Right?
It's great.
we find our common ground.
Right.
That's what I love more than anything.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that, why would I meet Jimmy Jam?
Right. And what did you find? I listened to it, but tell people what you think the common ground is that you found.
His family relationship with his father. With his dad. I mean, yeah. That's very relatable.
Yeah, it's a rough relationship.
I didn't have that, but it's such a human relatable thing.
35 years, they were estranged.
They just sent me a clip of he went to his dad's 95th birthday, and they played together for the first time since Jimmy Jam was a little kid, because dad left, and they were estranged. And it was this beautiful, beautiful thing.
And there's forgiveness in it, because Jimmy says at one point, you know, like, I finally got to a point when I started having my own kids, like,
yeah,
I kind of, not condoning it, but kind of understand. But that's what he had to do for himself. And, you know, some people just aren't fit, cut out at that point in their life to be a responsible parent or whatever.
Well, I will also say that Jimmy seems to be a somewhat enlightened human being.
Yes.
I don't think everybody would be that forgiving or that beautiful about it, but he is. He also has worked with some of the most talented people in the world, him included.
But I love it. Like, in middle school, he's playing in a play with
Prince. They met in middle school.
Yeah.
That story alone is worth listening for.
And he says, Prince, I think he said, so what's he like when, you know, he's playing? He goes, pretty much, it's the same as he's always been.
I thought, you're watching him do these riffs on the guitar, which, at 13.
Right.
I'm like, is
which was a Chicago. They were fans of Chicago. And he, I guess, lick for lick, did the solo from this song at 12 or 13.
When he's playing that at 13, is there more joy? Is there more, you know, like, look at me kind of thing? Because he's the coolest guy you've ever seen.
Right.
When we know him from later.
Right.
He said exactly the same demeanor. Just, that's right, I got this.
Yeah. There was not necessarily a big smile, not necessarily. No. It's a little bit like,
this is what I do.
Yeah, I'm this good.
I'm this good.
I'm good.
And then he throws the guitar in the air and it never comes down.
Yeah.
You've seen that clip?
Yes.
Holy cow. Who's cooler than him? Did you ever get to see him in person?
No, Prince? Did you?
A few times.
Really?
One of the best live performers who's ever lived.
In big venues, small venues?
Oh, I wish a small venue. No. There were those, you know, magical things that I would hear about people getting invited to. If you come at 2 a.m, first of all, I'm asleep at 2 a.m. I'm not.
Well, because of those THC cookies.
That's
of course
right.
You are.
No, even before that.
But there's nothing like...
I have my form of THC, which is called Old Jewish Man. puts you right out.
Can we package that?
It puts you right out.
I think we could sell a lot of that in New York and LA.
I think I could talk to you for a while. You'd fall asleep.
Well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned seeing Prince. So John Mayer, when he, you know,
he's
amazing.
He's awesome too.
Okay, but I didn't, there was a time when I didn't think he was. I thought he was a little bit of like a fluff girls kind of whatever, right? So Chappelle was here in New York and we were hanging out and we were doing some shows. I'm not name dropping, but you
that's
have to
a
understand,
good name to drop.
But you have to understand why. So there's like a private party that we go to and Mayer's playing at this private party. And I had a couple of drinks in me and I am there's maybe 40 people at this party and a little stage and John Mayer's here. So I'm as close to John Mayer as I'm close to you and he's playing.
Whoa.
And I'm just like, I was so wrong about this guy.
He's one of the great guitarists of all time.
Yes, yes.
Somebody explained to
blew me away.
That, and you're a musician, so you know, right?
I'm not really, but...
But you dabble.
Yeah.
He can literally play the rhythm guitar and the lead guitar line at the same time.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's scary. And I, you know, I kind of... I just was blown away. Like, you know, and I don't know, you know... And so I probably would never have gone to see him to pay to see him because, you know, not that he was bad to me, but just not my cup of tea. But it turned out to be very much my cup of tea, and I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I liked about Jimmy Jam's interview was that you got the personal stuff, but you also, the history, how he grew in the business, some great stories about running to his dad's place to grab a keyboard with Terry Lewis. Some really, like, you really do a great job letting the conversation go, but also at the end of it, I always feel like I really know the person and their work and their process.
Oh, well, thanks. That means a lot coming from you because you're an expert podcaster and interviewer, and I'm just starting.
No,
No, I think I, you know, you, the and also, you know, what I liked about it is I don't feel like I'm listening to a podcast. I feel like I'm sort of sitting at the table with you guys.
You know what does that? Lunch.
Yeah.
That's the lunch part of Naked Lunch.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah.
It is this great, not just equalizer, but calmer downer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just this, like, great.
Right. And it gives somebody something to do so they're not self-conscious
exactly.
about. Right. Right. So Elaine May, I can't wait. When is that coming up?
Soon.
All right.
I don't know the exact date, but it was long. We talked to her for 2.5 hours. So
wow. there, did you do it in New York or LA?
All about LA. I don't know if we're going to maybe split it into two parts or condense it a little bit and make it like an hour and a half. I don't know. But and she's awesome.
And you have a book. You're working on a book?
So there's the companion book called Somebody Feed Phil the Book. and it's got the requisite backstage photos and yeah. behind the scenes stuff and stories from
which,
me.
Which, by the way, I always love in the series how you're feeding the cameraman.
Always.
You're showing that. And I think I love it and I'm in the business, but people who aren't really like that kind of
I'm
stuff.
So glad.
They like to see how the sausage is made. They like to see.
It's not even that we're trying to show how the sausage is made, but we're just not hiding.
Yeah.
The fact that we're making the
sauna.
Show.
You say in the sauna, and I'm in television, and I didn't forget about this. It's like at one point
exactly.
you go, you know, there's four of us in this little thing, and I'm, oh, right, he's got his camera guy and his audio guy.
And then let's
there.
Show them.
and then
they're wiping the lens. Why? Because it's condensing. The fog is condensing on the lens.
Two middle-aged men, yes. and then two with their bathing suits, two other guys and a plate of sausage.
Fully
I'm like,
dressed
what am I
men
watching?
With heavy cameras
with
in the sauna.
Egg
Not
salad.
Nice for them.
Yeah.
Right? First of all, they have to look what they're focusing on. Me, naked.
You need to get some sun. You really do. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
No. So you, yeah, you do just feel like when you're listening to the podcast, like you're just right there. And
oh,
you're
thanks.
And you're having that conversation in real time.
Have but you, I want you, the real reason to get the book, that
oh, yeah,
other
go
stuff
back to
is
the
nice, but we got the most requested recipes from the first four seasons of the show. So it's like the world's best cookbook. Nothing to do with me.
So it's a cookbook off of the show.
Pretty much.
Wow.
But it's got the other
Very
stuff.
Smart.
It's a companion book and the cookbook. Comes out in the fall. You can pre-order it already. I'm telling you, 60 recipes. I think it's the best cookbook ever made because the 60 best chefs in the world have recipes in there.
And they all want to be on the show because it's the number one food and travel show. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Listen, it's not that I didn't try to do more sitcoms. I did. I still try. Nobody wants.
Why not? You're just going to be right time, right
Short-term
place.
Short-term goal.
Right. Who's hot? Who's
exactly.
That? Yeah.
They want to attract the young, hip audience right now. Even, by the way, when I did Raymond, they called me. And before it went on, they said, listen, we're wondering if you can make the show a little hipper, a little edgier. I said, well, you got the right guy. I'm Mr. Hip and Edgy. Why are you talking to me? I mean, I was like this when I was 20, let alone 60.
What were their suggestions for hip and edgy? Did
they didn't know. They didn't know. I said, you've seen the cast? Who's hip? You want to see Doris Roberts in a bathing suit, maybe? I don't know what you want.
We'll ever do lines in the show.
Whatever. I mean, the show is what it is.
Yeah.
And these people think that they can just put their stamp on anything and it's instantly popular and instantly
right.
hip. No, it's not. It has to... You
do
know,
you think this push for youth, has waned a little bit because there's so many different platforms now that there's a greater chance of stuff targeted to a slightly, I'm not saying old demographic, but
yeah.
not a 22-year-old demographic. Is there? Do you think now, I mean, the business is completely transformed from 3-4 broadcast networks and then some basic cables to what it is now with all these, but do
it
you think-
It doesn't make any sense to me.
But
it
do you
doesn't.
Think it's still harder to get
yes.
older stuff? Stuff targeted to older people.
Of course. You know who my, and they would never admit this, but my number one demographic that follows me? Women 20 to 40.
Follow you in the show or social media?
Both.
Really?
Yes, which brings up My question, where were you in high school when I needed you? I'm married 32 years now. I can't use any of you. Where were you when I needed you? I love you. I think it's great.
I don't mean this
very
in a bad
flattered.
Way, but I'm
you're shocked.
Yeah, a little bit. Not because you feel, I would, if it were mine, I'd be shocked. Like, what?
Why? I don't know why.
Because I think you're a guy a lot of women want. Like, invested, emotionally invested, nice guy, good looking guy,
dad,
smart.
Dad. It's not what you're thinking. Get your mind out of the gutter.
No, I didn't even mean sex. No, I didn't. Well, after I saw you in the sauna with no shirt on, you
I might have lost viewers.
You started this.
Yeah. Now, my new demo is women 80 to 100.
But you're not old enough to be their dad.
Of course I am. I am. My daughter is 24. My son is 27. I'm old, I tell you. As I put my hand on my side, I'm old, I tell you.
All right. So listen, everyone, this has been Phil Rosenthal, mensch of a mensch, and brilliant writer, host.
You're a mensch too. I'll make you honorary mensch.
All right.
Even though you're Italian.
Okay, but I feel like... All right, thank you. I feel the Italians and the Jews have a lot in common, so...
Yes, all problems are solved with food.
Yes.
And your mother never leaves you alone.
And every... I'll tell you a quick story, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
All the emotions are on the sleeves, right? So my wife is a WASP, Potter, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. They're
hard to have a fight.
I believe in stereotypes. I think we're in a culture now where we're trying to pretend like there are no stereotypes because people think if you point out a stereotype, you're being racially or ethnically biased, blah, blah, blah. My wife is very even. There's not a lot. I spent my whole life trying to get things out of her. When she gets upset, she doesn't. I say they don't emote, the WASP. They smoke, they drink martinis and get divorced. That's what they do. And her parents were divorced and her grandparents were divorced. Okay. Italians, it's all on the sleeve. Pass the salt. What did you mean by that? Right. So we met in high school. We dated a few months and I bring her to one of the Sunday Italian dinners that, you know, we did Raymond, you know, and the Jews have the same kind of thing. And it's the uncles, and we're in my Uncle Archie's basement, Knotty Pine basement, and who's smoking cigars and pipes and cigarettes, and there's wine and this and that. And my Uncle Archie's so Italian that they had the cold cuts, but it's got to be fresh. They had their own deli slicer in the basement, and they would buy the loaves of the cold cuts, and they would cut, it's got to be fresh, and they would cut their own.
Yeah, what a great house.
Yeah.
I love that.
So everybody's doing their thing and we leave. And I say to my wife, Carol, I'm like, what'd you think? She goes, oh, everybody was nice. The food was amazing. And then that was the other thing. Cause like they eat, like she would eat steak and potatoes most nights. It was like course after course. You could see her just like a boxer getting hammered in a corner, right? Body shots after body blows. And I go, what did you think? She goes, well, everybody was really nice. She goes, but, and they were really nice to me. I go, yeah, but what? She goes, well, why was everybody so mad at each other? Like, what do you mean? She goes, why was everybody yelling at each other all the time? I go, we weren't yelling. She goes, what do you mean? I go, that's how we talk.
Exactly. We're just talking.
We're just talking.
Always.
She goes, it just seemed like a lot. And, you know.
Same in our house.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful thing. I actually miss those parties.
Yeah.
We don't have them in our current.
I'll come over and yell at you.
All right. I hope so. Phil Rosenthal, you're the best.
Naked
Lunch is the podcast. Wherever a podcast can be gotten, I would imagine. Somebody Feed Phil. Season 5, new, awesome, Netflix, and a book coming out of recipes. And I'm an honorary mensch. I think this is the best part of this whole interview. Love you, man. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That's my pal, Phil. Hope you enjoyed it. Great series, Somebody Feed Phil on Netflix. Check it out. As always, tell your friends about the podcast. Send the link around and follow me on social media, at Paul Mercurio. And I got more stand-up happening later in the summer. In August, I'm going to be in Arizona and Scottsdale. I'm going to be in Plano, Texas. So I'm all over, and we'll tell you more about that as it gets closer. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.